those of you who don't know me, my name is Muhammad Akbar Jaffery. Muslim Congress approached me and a couple other people, and there's a committee that was put together that was trying to look at professional development, and the focus for this session was professional development in relation to becoming a doctor. So we kind of labeled this as how to become a doctor. So just background on me, I grew up in Michigan. I went to school at the University of Michigan, then I went to actually in Atlanta, so I was at Emory University for medical school, stayed on for urology residency, and then now I'm back in practice at a community hospital in Detroit. And so when I was asked to be part of this, I really was excited about the opportunity because I really feel in retrospect that I wish we had done more of this. And when people come up to me or to other people and we are giving advice, a lot of times the advice is a little bit too late. And so my hope with this is, again, people in the audience will be at different stages in their career, different stages in the levels of their training, to not look at this as being the only way that this can be successful. And if you haven't done this, or you don't have those numbers, or you're not following this path, it's not one way of getting these things done. But if you do it, you can also use this as a guide to people below you, or if people come to you as for mentorship as well, to be used in the future. So the first part of this session, what we'll do is we'll focus on a lecture by me, and then I'll do a moderated panel session. And then we'll leave it open to kind of questions that people have that they can direct to the panel. So in the beginning, we'll go through talking about college life, how you can prepare in college to get into medical school. So I think the first thing we have to think about is, what's the end game? What can we do to get into medical school? And what we need to know is what is the medical school looking for in an applicant, and how we can maximize our quality of our application so that we can get in. So what a medical school is looking for is your GPA and your coursework, so your grade point average, what classes you've taken, your MCAT, which is a standardized test that we'll go over, volunteerism, community service. Now, this is not volunteering in the hospital. This is more of a volunteering anywhere, and it's non-medical volunteering to show that you're care about the community in general. A lot of times people in the admissions committees, they want to look to people who are trying to improve society. And when we talk about that, you know, when the volunteerism, you know, when I was in college, I was thinking volunteer in the hospital, but actually it's more of, can this person, is they're looking to try and help the community at large? And that could be anything. So you can even volunteer in your local mosque, in your local center, and you know, put that on your application as a means of showing how you are volunteering, helping the community service. Shadowing, so shadowing is where you hang out with the physician. And the purpose of this is that the admissions committee wants you to know, or to see that this person actually knows what they're getting into. Are they actually know what a doctor is like? Do they actually know what the medical field is like? And that's the purpose of shadowing. Research, any research, can be basic science, it can be bench research, it can be, you know, chart reviews, just research in general. They're looking for involvement in that. Extracurricular activities, life experiences, we'll get into that further in letters of recommendation. Okay. So when you first start college, you're very excited, you're motivated, you're energetic, a lot of times people take a lot of credits. And I find that after that first semester, people are behind. They wind up doing poorly. They're overwhelmed in school. And so what I say as my advice is for your first semester, from a course load standpoint, start slow, because there's a huge adjustment. You know, a lot of times people are living away from home. It's a new environment in terms of your classes. It's a new environment in terms of your friends. It's a new environment in terms of your teachers. And so you need to adjust to that. And so take a lighter course load can help with that. You want to find good quality mentors. I was very blessed. There were juniors and seniors that I had at school that I found that really gave me good advice, and their advice I took to heart, and I think a lot of my success I can attribute to having good quality mentors that I could use, that could ask for help, that gave me the tools to succeed, that gave me the tools to study, that kind of helped direct what classes I took, and that's something that you need to search out. And if you don't have that in your immediate school, you need to find somebody in your center, or you can always contact anybody that you know is going to present today. I think in the freshman year, it's a huge difference in comparison to high school. In high school, you go to class in the morning, you stay there all day until the afternoon, and then you go home. Whereas in college, you have 1 hour, 2 hour blocks various times during the day, and there's a lot of free time. And it's easy to use that free time inappropriately. And so if you manage your time well, if you manage your time efficiently, you can have a good time, you can have a social life, but you can also succeed as well. And then the last thing is that this is a clean slate, which is good and bad. So for those of you who did really, really well in high school, it doesn't matter. Your high school record doesn't go for your medical school application. Likewise, if you didn't do that great and you're starting college, it's a brand new clean slate. And so now you can start from scratch and you can excel. So if you start late, you can do really well. Okay. So other things that you can do during your freshman year is, like I said, find good mentors. So juniors and seniors that are applying, so they can tell you a little bit about tricks of the trade specific to your school. Your school will a lot of times have advisors. The advisors can help direct you towards volunteering. They can direct you towards research. They can direct you towards what courses you need to take. A lot of schools will have pre-health clubs or pre-med clubs that can help in terms of seeing what projects are out there. It can give you exposure to the medical field so you can see what kind of medical issues are there. And then during your summertime, the summertime is a place where you can really stand out, where you can use life experiences to add to your application, to augment your application. And so a lot of times with these admission committees, they want to see people who will fit a role or fit something exciting into their medical school class. They want to see how would this person fit into our class. And so, if you have financial capabilities, you can travel abroad or you can study abroad. And the best time to do that would be in the summer. Next slide. So your sophomore year, so you're plugging along, you gotten used to college, you're kind of continuing on with your coursework. This is more time that you can volunteer, you can intern, you can get a job. Again, your focus should still be in school. Your focus should, you should not be sacrificing your coursework and your GPA, but this is other times to kind of augment your application. When we talk about research, I found it really challenging. So I went to University of Michigan. It's a huge campus. It's very challenging to figure out what research to do. It's very challenging to figure out what research projects to do. And so now after the fact, I know now better ways to get involved. So how do you do that? So one is, for medicine, there are people called program directors. So like Mahendra's over there. So program directors are the ones who are in charge of the residency program. And so they will have a secretary or a program coordinator that kind of helps take care of the residency. And so that's a person that you can contact, because all of these residencies have faculty that are interested in research. And they're just looking for people who can do the labor, because a lot of times they don't have the labor capabilities of doing some of the projects that they want. And so a college student is perfect. And a lot of times you can do easy research based on your skill set. And sometimes those are productive in the sense that you can get an abstract or a publication or a presentation that will really help your application shine. You talk to your peers. And the reason I say that is because a lot of times people will get involved in research and the research that they're doing might be fantastic. But it's not productive. Productive in the sense that it doesn't give you an abstract, it doesn't give you a publication, it doesn't give you a presentation, which are checkboxes that really make your application stand out. Your school advisor and bulletin boards, a lot of times that's how I found mine, was a bulletin board. I saw that there was a posting for a need for an internship, and so that's how I found mine. Shadowing, so how do you figure out who to shadow? So alhamdulillah, in a lot of our center communities, there's a lot of physicians. So you can approach one of the physicians and say, hey, doctor, so-and-so, hey, auntie, hey, uncle, I'm interested in applying for medical school. Do you mind if I hang out with you? So you can do this on your summertime. You can do this on, when you have Thanksgiving holidays, Christmas holidays. It's just shadowing just for a little bit, just to get exposure. And most people are really excited to have somebody to hang out with them for a day. The other person that you can contact is, again, the program director secretary. How do you find that? There's a website called acronym FRIDA, which is where you'll find the listings of all the program directors and all their secretaries. And then the other thing is to stay on track for medical school. So you got to think about what prerequisites are needed, which I'll go over in just a little bit, for medical school, so you can inshallah finish on time, meaning, you know, over the course of 4 years. During your sophomore year, you should also be thinking about picking a major and what major you want to do. And from a medical school standpoint, you don't have to do a science major. Doing a science major can be convenient. It can be convenient in the sense that the prerequisites for medical school are similar to the prerequisites for your major, so it's simpler to go through those classes and graduate on time. However, if you are able to handle the course load, do your prerequisites, and do another major, then that can be something else that can make your application stand out, can make it somewhat unique. So I did economics, and so I know that that was a common topic that came up during my interviews. I know that that was something that when I started medical school, there was a slide that was presented to say we had X number who had this degree, we had X number who had that degree, we had, you know, Y number that had this degree. And so it kind of is another way of kind of saying, making your application stand out among the crowd. Double major, minor, if you can do that, great. I don't think the advantage is that strong from a medical school standpoint, so sometimes it's really challenging to do all that coursework. You want quality over quantity. If you can do it, great, if you can do it well. But if you feel like you're rushing or you're taking on too many credits, then don't sacrifice your GPA for that. So this is just an example of some of the prerequisites. So this I took from Emory's website. So again, this is when you're talking about your major, you gotta think, okay, do I have enough hours or enough credits, enough class time to do the courses for my major and all these prerequisites for medical school, right? So, you know, so some of this I think will factor in based on how many credits you have coming in. Do you have a lot of AP classes? Do you have, you know, some of those that you can knock out some of these semester hours? So 8 semester hours in biology, 8 semesters of chemistry, 8 semester of, you know, organic chemistry, and so on. And so, you know, these are the things that you want to look at in terms of trying to figure out what major you're going to do, as well as, you know, what classes are needed, so that when you are ready to apply, you've actually completed all the coursework and you're not scrambling at the end of your college career. Okay, Mortiza. So extracurricular activities. This is the most flexible part of the application. This is how you are choosing how you're going to represent yourself to a medical school. This is how you are going to embellish your GPA, embellish your MCAT, so that a medical school can say, this is who I want in my class. This is who I want to add to my program. This is who I want that I think will make our class stand out and make it really strong. So when you look at the website, for the application website, you can enter up to 15 activities. And so this is a common thing that I'll see, is I'll have somebody say, okay, you know, Muhammad Akbar, can you help me with my application? Can you review my application? And so I see, okay, they got a good GPA, they got a good MCAT, and then I look at their activities, there's nothing. So there's hundreds of people who have a good GPA, there's hundreds of people who have a good MCAT, so why should a medical school take you who has no activities? You might be a great person. You might become a great doctor, but they don't know that. So the more you can fill into this and make yourself stand out, the better, okay? So when you're filling out the application, you have to give a little blurb. So you can give a little blurb about each item. And so this is where, you know, you try and do activities that you really like, because then you'll be more passionate about it when you present it. But you also have to do some things that you don't love, you know, so just to kind of fill the space, right? So you might not love research, but that's something that medical schools like, so just do it. You know, and again, just like before, non-medical volunteer work is appreciated. That's something that's commonly, that they'll look at as something of a plus. And that's something that actually for all of us is easily available, because all of us, you know, go to our centers and there's ample opportunity to participate. And again, you want quality over quantity, and this is something that you want to kind of start from when you begin and towards when you finish. And this is also where you want to try and I'll bring this up a little bit later, is you want to network. You know, you want to meet the appropriate people. You want to get to know people who have status, people who have decision-making capabilities, because it's a lot of these relationships that will allow you to advance more so than anything that's on your application going forward to help, okay? So junior year, this is when things get really serious. This is when you're noticing the end, you know, that your time is finishing, and this is when we talk about the MCAT. So it's a scary exam. I'll go over in detail. But in my junior year, if you plan appropriately, you can kind of lighten your course load the semester you're taking the MCAT. And so that's needed because this is like a course in and of itself. You can consider a review course. There's different, you know, companies that have that. So there's Kaplan, there's Princeton Review, there's USMLE World. They're not cheap, okay? So they can be expensive. What I would do is, they're both, you know, from a Kaplan and Princeton Review, they're both excellent courses. I would talk with people in your area to see which one is better, because where I went to school, the lecturers for Princeton Review were better than Kaplan, but it might be different here. So I would just ask around if you know people who've taken those courses, which ones that they found better. But again, they're not cheap. This is also when you gotta be thinking about your letters of recommendation. So you wanna talk about or kind of think about what kind of relationships that you can develop with certain faculty members, with certain advisors, so that you'd feel comfortable that they would write a letter for you, as well as, inshallah, that they would write you a strong letter of recommendation going forward, okay? So the MCAT, this is a little bit difficult to talk about because the MCAT actually has changed. So in 2015, the format for the MCAT is different. So a lot of what I'm going to say is based on what I've read from the AAMC website, from what I've read from multiple websites about the MCAT, but a lot of this is just speculative because you know, there's not a lot of data and experience on it. It's a new exam. So before, the MCAT had you know, a bio section, a physical sciences section, a verbal section, and a written section, and now they've changed it. And the purpose of why they're changing it is they want to test not what you know, but they're trying to test, quote unquote, how well they use what they know. So there's four sections, and the first two sections are kind of your nitty gritty, you know, science-based sections. You know, your first section is bio, the second section is chemistry and physics. The third section is kind of your social interaction, social adaptation standpoint. So psychological, social, and biological foundations of behavior. And then the last section is your critical reasoning. And so again, they're trying to test not your fund of knowledge, not your ability to memorize, but they're trying to assess, or the theory behind it is your ability to interpret and to rationalize and to think through certain problems that they feel is what a standard physician would do. So there's a score for each section. So each section is ranged from 118 to 132. So the total score ranges between 472 to 528, and it's centered around a mean of 500. The MCAT is different. It's different than any exam you've taken. It's different than any exam you'll take afterwards. And so the key thing that to succeed in it is to practice. So practice. And the way you do that is you do questions. The more questions you do, the more it takes away from the fear of the MCAT, the more it gets you familiar with how the questions are done, the more it lets you feel where your weaknesses are, where your strengths are, how you can focus your studying, take away the anxiety, let you manage your time. And so the best thing to do, as much as you want to read, as much as you want to memorize, the key is to do questions. You want to learn the test. You want to be efficient in your studying, and you want to lose the distractions. I took the MCAT twice. I took the MCAT twice purely because I was poor with my time efficiency. I was distracted with friends. I hung out a lot, and then I didn't do as well. And so I had to take it twice, which you don't want to do because it's incredibly stressful. It's a horrible time in your life. You're always nervous about it, and it's expensive. So, you know, you want to try and do it once. You want to try and do really well, and the best way you do it is to take as many questions as you possibly can. Okay. So again, this is kind of a slide representing, you know, it's centered around the mean being 500. You know, what is an appropriate score? What is an adequate score? It's hard to say. So let's move on one more slide. Actually, Sally, there's some handouts. Can you just pass those handouts out? So this is hard to read from the back, but this is, again, purely hypothetical. This is from the AAMC website, and it's trying to say what the percentiles are. So this was my way of trying to say what is a good MCAT score, which again is I think impossible to tell right now. So at the very left column, the bottom 500 is the 50th percentile, okay? And 508 is the 83rd percentile, 528 is the 99th percentile. So that's giving you percentiles of what they're trying to look for. But again, what is a good MCAT score from a medical school standpoint? I can't comment, and I don't think we know that right now. So now we're moving on to your last year in college. So now, alhamdulillah, you're done with everything. It's typically a nice, fun year from a standpoint of classes. But it is a stressful year in the sense that you have to apply. So when you look at the data, how many schools should you apply to? So the average number of schools is 15. And so when you look at the AMCAS application, which I'll go over in a little bit, you know, one school, you pay $160. Each additional school is about $37. So the average cost from applying strictly from the application is about $700-$800. So you got to plan for the interviews. It's expensive. You know, you have flights, you have hotels, you got your food arrangements. And so it's, you know, your clothes for you're going to wear for the interview. The secondary application will go over in just a second. So it can be an expensive year. So the application process, so there's the Association of American Colleges, that's the AAMC. They have an application called AMCAS, so the American Medical Application Service. It's a single primary application. So you fill out this application. This application goes to all the medical schools. And the time that you can first send it out is July 1st. Then there's something called a secondary application, which I'll go over, and then the interviews. So what's on the application? So your demographics, so identifying information, so who you are, where you're born, what's your date of birth, your gender, et cetera, what schools you attended, so where you went to high school, where you went to college, biographic information, your coursework, so your transcript, working activities, which again is the way that you can promote yourself, which is the way you can make yourself stand out, the letters of evaluation, so your letters of recommendation, what medical schools you're applying to, there's an essay, and then your MCAT. So what is a good GPA? What is a good MCAT score? So this is hard to project. So the top part of it is all applicants. The bottom part of it is all people who have matriculated or been accepted. So there's almost 50,000 applicants and about 25,000 people who get accepted, okay? Your mean science GPA is about 3.63. The mean MCAT, which is now again irrelevant, is around 30. Does that mean if you have a science GPA that's lower than 3.63, you're not gonna get in? No. Does that mean that if you have one higher than that, you're gonna get in? No. But this is just kind of a ballpark to look at kind of going forward, okay? So this is again something similar around the same lines, you know, just kind of showing that your mean science, mean non-science GPA. So, you know, in 2014, the mean science GPA is like 3.63, the non-science GPA is 3.77, GPA total is about 3.69, and again, about 50% of people, or 45 to 50% of people wind up getting accepted who apply for medical school. So that's the MD schools. The DO, when I looked it up online, I couldn't get one kind of slide like that, so I kind of went to different schools to see what their stuff was. So these are kind of, they're all pretty much centered around the same. So these are kind of various schools that I picked, I just randomly chose. So the average MCAT for DO school, again, you know, at that time was a 27 to 27 and a half, and the GPA kind of ranged between, you know, 3.4 to 3.63 in terms of the average GPA for a DO school. So letters of recommendation. So technically you could send 10 letters. Don't send 10 letters. You know, so you want to send at least three, if not four letters. Okay, so most people send 2 to 3. I would probably say you want to try and get 3 good letters. For me, this was really challenging. This was really challenging because, you know, for when I took chemistry, there was 500 students. So when I took psychiatry, there were so many students that I was actually in a separate auditorium watching a video feed of a live lecture going on at a different auditorium. So it's really challenging to kind of get to know somebody to say, hey, this is this person and I recommend it and I think that they're a good candidate. So you got to plan for this. So, you know, our school had things called office hours. So that was times that the professor would have open that you could go meet with them. So this would be a good time to kind of get one-to-one FaceTime. You know, if you do research, you'll get to know that person really well. So that's another reason to do research, is because that's going to be a, you know, a letter. And, you know, That's the other thing is that you might want a letter from somebody you saw in your sophomore year, so you come back to them junior year and they haven't seen you in a year, they're not going to remember who you are, right? So if you see somebody that you developed a good relationship, you did successful work with them, and you say, hey, this is somebody that I want to pursue for a letter, then remember that and follow up with them and meet with them again so that when you do approach them for a letter, then they'll know, okay, yeah, this is Qasim, this is Muhammad Akbar, this is Muhammad Raza. Yeah, I'd be happy to write you a letter. I'll write you a great letter. Because it's, again, another way for you to stand out from the crowd. Your personal statement. This is a horrible experience. Writing a personal statement is just so awkward. You know, we're generally humble people. We're generally people who don't like to boast. We don't like to brag. And then now you have to write a letter saying why you're awesome. You want to write a letter why you should accept me. And it goes against all that's inherent in you. But it's really important. And so the purpose of this letter is twofold. It's trying to say why you want to attend medical school, but really why you want to become a doctor and why you want to do medicine. So that's the purpose of it. It should not be a way of basically recapping all the experiences that you've already put into the application. Okay, so they're not looking for you to say, you know, I did volunteering and I did research with this guy. So they want to see how you decided to become a doctor, why you should become a doctor, what characteristics are there for you to say, hey, this person will be a good doctor. The people who are on the admissions committee are reading hundreds of these. They're reading tens, dozens of these. So you want a catchy start. You want something that grabs them in, something that catches them so they have interest, because it's really boring to read. It's terrible to write. And it will take you a long time to write it. Plan for it. A lot of people get writer's block when they're trying to write for this. And then likewise, once you do it, even though it's so embarrassing to write, and when you read it, you want to vomit, you still want to have people review it. So have multiple people look at it, multiple people take a look at it to make sure your grammar is right, make sure you don't make a silly spelling mistake, which will really stand out. Make sure that somebody doesn't say, hey, you know what, actually, this would be a better way of describing this. Or, hey, what about this experience that you didn't think about that would be really good? So you want to have multiple people take a look at it. So once you sent your primary application in, then it goes to all the medical schools, and then all the medical schools will then receive it, and then they'll review it, and then there's something called a secondary application. So a secondary application, who gets it is a little bit medical school dependent. So some medical schools, whatever application as a primary they receive, every single one of those people will get a secondary application. For other medical schools, they will initially filter those initial, and then they will say, okay, these are people who we think are appropriate that we want to look at further. We will send those people a secondary application. And most of the schools will have specific questions or essays that you'll have to write on the secondary application. Tell us a experience that represents who you are, or tell us an experience of difficulty for you, or tell us who your best friend is and why, or tell us something that other people don't know about. So these are kind of common questions or answers that you'll have to give on your secondary application. Treat those with the same respect and attention as you would for the personal statement. Again, this is a way to represent yourself. This is a way for you to stand out. This cost comes in again. A lot of this stuff is very expensive. Each of these will carry a fee. And be timely with these. These get very overwhelming. You're going through school, then you finish your primary application, you got your coursework, and then these secondary applications come in, and if you're not timely and efficient with these, they pile up. So you want to be kind of quick about it. The other thing is that you want to be as quick as you can so that your application is reviewed early, and you don't know if the schools have rolling applications that they're not going to accept people going forward. So you want to be kind of timely and punctual with responding with these. So the interview. So inshallah, once you sent that out, you get accepted for an interview. Dress the part, right? So, business attire, shirt, tie, well-groomed, keep your beard nice and kept. Don't shave your beard, but keep your beard nice and clean. For females, dress with appropriate business attire. Neutral colors, they're not looking for you to stand out. This is not your time to wear a bright fluorescent tie. This is not your time to wear funny socks. This is not your time to wear sneakers. Physicians are pretty conservative, so you want to stay conservative, but you want to look sharp. Turn off your phone and buy a legal pad or portfolio. It's the only time you'll ever have a legal pad or portfolio. So just buy it and bring it with you and have a pen so that you're not the only person who doesn't walking around without a legal pad when everybody else has one, okay? When you meet with them, make eye contact, nice firm handshake. Really, really, really respect the support staff. They can only hurt you. Okay, if you go, mine was called Jenny. If you upset Jenny, you were done. Okay, so some people were rude to Jenny. Some people didn't even realize they were rude to Jenny, but they were rude to Jenny. They're done, okay, because she is the one who has your paper. She is the one that will comment and say, wow, that person was a total jerk, right? But your interaction with the interviewer is just a couple minutes, you know? So how is he gonna defend you and say, no, he's not a jerk. I've met him for 2 minutes. No, you know, so really, 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 really respect the support staff. Always write follow-up thank you letters that goes into your file. So I would always keep, blank thank you cards in my backpack, and on the way home, I would do that because those also pile up. But you want to make sure you write thank you letters. If you've found a school that you say, this is my number one school, then you write a letter of intent to say that. That's another way to improve your application, improve your standing. People want to accept people that are excited to come there. Don't send 10 letters of intent. Be honest about it, but you do want to send your primary letter of intent. You know, the first thing I would do when I go into interview, I'd read all my surahs that I memorized. You know, I would take a slow, deep breath, you know, try and relax. As you can see, I mumble. I talk really fast, so I try and tell myself not to talk fast, not to mumble, you know, make eye contact. The other thing is that you want to have prepared questions. At the end of the interview, they will typically will say, what questions do you have for me? And you don't want to say nothing. So you want to have your standard questions. There are some interviews that will only be questions. They'll sit down, somebody's probably really lazy, didn't prepare for the interview. They'll sit down and say, what questions do you have? And you got to fill 30 minutes worth of questions. So have prepared questions, right? So some common questions that I would say have would, you know, what do you think of the quality of the medical students that graduate from here? Or why did you choose to work here? Or some things like that. Or ask around and see what other good questions that people have, because that always comes up. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. For when you apply for a residency, you should ask similar types of questions, but also say, you know, some generic stuff. So if you're interviewing and you know who you're going to interview with, it's a famous person, so you can ask something based on their field. You know, oh, why did you say this? And they're like, oh, wow, this guy looked at my stuff. Or, you know, how did you choose to, come to work here? Or, you know, what do you think is the biggest, seminal event of, I'm a urologist of urology since you've been, in practice, so those are kind of interesting, conversation questions that make you stand out and look unique. But again, have your set memorized questions. Don't try and think of it on the fly. Don't think like, oh, once I interact with them, I'll know what to ask. Kind of have your set ones kind of going in there. Practice with family or friends beforehand. So I've had people who I've had phone conversations with or talked to them in person and I interviewed them. And you'll realize how difficult it is to answer those questions, or you'll think that you have answers when you actually don't, and I learned this the hard way. I got one of my interview questions for medical school was tell me about yourself. I mean, could you have a simpler question than that? But it was so hard for me to answer. Tell me about, what do I tell them? Do I tell them that I love basketball, or do I tell them that I'm really, religious, or do I tell them that I like family, and or do I tell them that I just want to be a doctor super badly, or do I, it's good to practice, because then you'll learn your weaknesses, you'll learn that you actually don't have prepared answers that you thought you would, and I'll help you in those situations. And the key thing with the interview is they want to see your personality, they want to say, can this person hold a conversation, are they an interesting person that we want to take? So MD-DO, so this is, they're essentially very, 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 very similar. So this is a slide taken from the AAMC website, and how's my time? You can use the MCAT for both. There's something called the COMLET. You can use the MCAT for both. You have to complete your undergraduate degree. It's a four-year program. Typically, it's followed by residency. You can do any, specialty going forward, and you're certified after you pass your exams. What are the differences? So it's a hard slide to see. So the MD, you apply using AMCAS, whereas the DO, you use the AAO, I don't know how to pronounce it, but AOCOMAS, so it's slightly different. There are more MD schools, so there's 140 medical schools in the United States where there's only 30 DO schools. For the MD, you take the USMLE exam, which is your board, your steps, whereas the DO, you can take the USMLE, but you take the COMLEX. And with the DO, they do a slightly different training. So they do in the musculoskeletal system and, you know, osteopathic manipulative treatment, which is part of the curriculum that's with DO, that's not with the MD. So that's the main difference. At the end of the day, if you have a DO, can you work? Yeah, you can. You know, there's DOs that work in my hospital. There are DOs that worked at every hospital that I've been at. The difference is again, these subtle differences. The other thing is that because there's less programs, you know, which some of this is changing, but from a fellowship standpoint, sometimes it's a little bit more challenging because there's not as many spots. Or for certain fields, it might be a little bit challenging because there's not as many spots. So for urology, you know, dermatology, et cetera, there's not as many available spots per se as maybe an MD residency that's there. Caribbean schools. So this information I got from, I tried to get somebody on the panel, but I wasn't able to get somebody on the panel from a Caribbean school. But so this is me kind of talking to somebody who has completed Caribbean Medical School and is currently in residency. And so with the Caribbean schools, there's, you know, different, there's a lot of Caribbean schools. So the ones that are, that I've heard the most about are Ross and St. George's. So you send in your full application. It's a separate application for the Caribbean schools. It's not part of your AAMC, but it's similar to the MCAS. And the interview is typically an alumni interview, so you're not typically going to the Caribbean for it. You're having somebody locally here that'll interview you. In years one and two, it's similar classes like you're taking, but the big difference is there's almost an intent to weed out people. So they'll take 600-700 people, but in terms of how many people go on to clinicals is about 200 students. So it's very, very different in that sense. It's almost an intentional attempt to kind of weed out the classes because they actually don't have that many clinical spots that are there. And so to go from years one and two to beyond, you know, you have to pass your assembly step one, you know, your third year rotations. The school will have relations with programs in the U.S., so you're not doing your rotations in the Caribbean. You'll kind of arrange most of your fourth year rotations on your own, again, within the network of your school. But when you apply, you're applying as a foreign medical school graduate. It's pretty expensive, last thing. So it's, you know, for the first year, it was about $70,000 for them. Okay, go for it. So what if you don't get in? If we don't get in, how can you kind of try and improve your standing, right? So you can either work or study abroad. You want to do something that makes yourself stand out, so something that wasn't there before. If your GPA was poor, you might consider doing like a master's, so you can kind of get a certificate and show that you're, you know, to help improve your GPA. You can do a master's in other things like an MPH or an MBA or some sort of other graduate degree to help. And then you want to try and really network. So you want to try and really meet people, get to know people, see if you can work in the admissions committee so you can get relations to kind of help you get in. Okay. So now moving on to medical school. Good. So inshallah you get in, inshallah you're in medical school. We got people here that are starting in a couple weeks. So how are you going to do well in medical school? So medical school is overwhelming in the beginning with the amount of information you have to learn. So do not cram. Okay, it's not a, you know, you could probably get away with that in high school. You might have been able to get away with that in college, not in medical school. You gotta study always. You want to be efficient in your studying, which you'll learn, which is part of it. You want to really, really focus, right? So the first couple of years are really, again, clean slate. It didn't matter what you did in college. You're starting from scratch. So you want to focus. So inshallah that you can do well, and you can inshallah do well on your boards. Don't get down on yourself. So a lot of people excelled in college, excelled in high school, and you get to medical school and you're not with the cream of the crop and you're not going to do it well. You're not going to get honors on everything. And my school still had ABCDs. You're not going to get A's on everything. So don't get hard on yourself. It's purposely harder. It's a much harder curriculum. You're surrounded by much smarter people. So you're not going to succeed as you've done before. This is also a little bit different in the sense that, you know, for me, I knew I wanted to become a doctor from the beginning. So, you know, all my classes were, you know, not that exciting. You know, I knew it was nothing I was going to do. I took econ, economics, you know, just for the sake of taking economics, but I knew it wasn't something I was going to do long term. Whereas now I was actually studying something that I'm going to use later on in life. So you did want to learn what medicine is about. You do want to learn what kind of field you want to go into. You want to try and plan for family time. So it's not all about school. You're not going to remember now where I am right now about studying. You're going to remember your life experience and your family experiences. And you want to ignore two different types of people. There's your gunners who will say that, you know, if you don't get straight A's, you don't get AOA, you don't get a 100 perfect score on your board, so you're not going to get into residency. Ignore them. That's not true. Likewise, you want to ignore the people that lie. So you want to ignore the people that say, I didn't study for this at all. They're lying. There's no way you can succeed if you don't study. Okay? Everyone studies. So ignore them. I've seen people who have really done poorly because they hung out with the wrong crowd of people who pretended that they didn't study when everybody does. You want to find your stress relief. It's very stressful. So, you know, for me, it was playing basketball. You know, for other people, it's going, hanging out with friends. For other people, it's something else. But for me, it was, that was my stress relief, was working out, playing basketball. And I will say this from personal experience, and the people here in Atlanta can attest to this. I forgot about Islam. What I mean by that is I did not attend the center as much as I wish I did now. I did not become an active member of my community. And I had the wrong mindset. You know, I had the mindset that if I go to the center, I'm going to do poor, which is actually the opposite. How would I do poor if I didn't, you know, get closer to Islam? So from my personal standpoint, don't forget Islam, because that's the only way to help you. And I kind of mean that in the sense of, you know, be a member of your community. So I kind of mentioned it like that. Okay? So year one, you know, it's just classes typically. You know, you're going to study. You're hanging out with people. That's all they do. They're like this studying. You want to search again for good mentors. You know, mentors was how I found out about my field, to look for it. So you want to talk to people above you to kind of see what kind of fields that you might be interested in. You want to, don't forsake the peripheral classes. So, you know, you might want to focus, you know, your focus is anatomy, your focus is pathophysiology, your focus is this. But there are other classes that your school requires you to take that are graded. So if you're like me and you ignore those, then you, when you get a grade, you realize like, oh man, I got a grade for this and I didn't focus on this. So don't forget like the peripheral side classes that your school has. And in the summertime, if you can, you want to do research. Okay. So it's really important to try and get research, because that will really help augment and improve your application. Mm-hmm. So year two is more classes. These typically are a little bit more interesting. They're less basic science. They're more kind of what you think of that you would need to know to become a doctor. So even though they're harder, you get a little bit more interested. During the school year, you know, some of the websites will recommend talking about doing research. And to me, my focus would be on your school. A lot of times your school will have an elective. This is how you'll figure out what you may want to do in your career or what you might not want to do in your career, which is my case, and then you'll take step one. Mm-hmm. So what is step one? So the U.S. Medical Licensing Exam, step one, the boards, okay? So this is after your second year. It's a one-day exam. It costs $850, and there's 308 questions, so it's seven blocks. So you go to the computer center, you take a block. Each block is 60 minutes long. And you get at least 45 minutes break, but if you finish any of your sections fast enough, you'll have a little bit extra break time. A passing score on step one is 192, but the mean score is about 227, you know, 225, 227 for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. How do you do well on step one? So get a schedule, and you talk to people to figure out what a schedule is. So I made a calendar. And it's kind of a general guideline, but I would say, okay, for this day I'm going to study biochem, for this day I'm going to study anatomy, for this day I'm going to study this. So you kind of get a schedule that kind of helps you focus, that kind of helps you stay organized. When you have a schedule, you want to really kind of avoid talking to other people, because that will only stress you out. So you'll be studying anatomy and somebody else will be studying pharmacology, and then they'll ask you a question on pharmacology and you won't know it, and then you'll say, oh my God, I'm behind, I don't know my pharmacology, which according to your schedule, you shouldn't have known pharmacology, but it only stresses you out. So try and avoid some of the background noise, kind of stick with your plan, and if you stick with it, inshallah, you'll do well. In my opinion, if you master these two things, you can do exceedingly well on the boards. There are, when I first started studying, I had a stack of books this big, of review books for every subject, which is overwhelming, which is impossible to know all of that. There's no way you're going to know all of that. So if you can truly, truly, truly master, there's a book called First Aid, and there's a question source called QBank, or there's a different companies that sell their questions. And if you master both of those and know those inside and out, you will do unbelievably well. With the caveat being, the QBank is questions, and to study that, you're truly studying the answers. Okay? Go for it. So year three is your rotations, you're getting into the hospital. You know, you can or can't do research depending on your time. This is when you want to figure out what you want to be growing up. So it's you're going to decide, do I want to do medicine? Do I want to do surgery? Lifestyle, how much does that factor into your decision about, you know, what field you choose? How competitive you are, which I'll go over some of that in a little bit. And then again, just like when you're in college, you got to think about letters of recommendation. You want to think about relationships that you can develop so that people can write you letters. So how do you succeed on the wards? You want to be professional, so you want to dress appropriate, you want to be respectful with staff, you want to be respectful for the residents, your fellow students. You want to be punctual. It looks really, really bad if you're late. You want to understand there's no life for residents, there's no life for your attendings, so all they do is they talk about work. So just understand they're going to gossip. So if you say something bad about somebody, you might as well assume the entire department knows. So be careful with the words that you use. You want to be honest. You know, you will be asked a question and you might not know the answer, or you'll be asked a question about your patient and you might not have the information. Don't lie. Be honest, because if you are caught in a lie, it will look terrible, okay? And in general, right? I mean, obviously, you should be honest and so on. You want to appear interested. You know, this is what people do for their life. So, you know, if you show a disinterest, then, you know, that reflects poorly on you. And so that's one way to be successful, is to show interest in what you are. You know, you want a concept of arriving early, leaving late. You want to know when you have patients that they're having you follow. You want to know everything about them. But at the same time, you don't want to show up your fellow students or the resident. So if you know something that your resident doesn't know, you know, don't try and show them up in front of the attending to show what knowledge you have. You kind of your other ways of kind of getting that information out there without making other people look bad. When you can, you know, to improve on it, to show your interest, you can perform a literature review on the patient. Ask for feedback. People always think it looks like good quality if you ask for feedback about your performance. And you know, I put Goldilocks in parentheses for asking questions. You know, you want to ask questions just so interest, but you don't want to ask too many questions, just be annoying. So you want it just right in terms of showing interest and asking questions. Okay. Last year, you're doing away rotation, so that's other ways to see different programs so that you can show interest and help out. You'll take step two. So depending on your step one score, you might want to take this early to help out. Your application, if you did really well, you might want to delay it, so you only have your step one score that's out there where you apply, and it's essentially, you know, interviewing and applying similar to that you've done before. Mm-hmm. So the application for medical school is called ERAS. So again, it's part of the AAMC. You'll have your standard demographics. You'll kind of put in, so again, you want to improve your application. So you want to have experiences. You want to have research. If you can present somewhere, that'd be great. If you publish something, awesome. You know, you have your personal statement. You'll put your transcript for your school, your transcript for your boards. Your school will give what's called a dean's letter. The dean's letter will talk about, you know, who you are, what your standing is in the school. So it's almost like another letter of recommendation. The cost, so for the first 10 schools, you know, it's $97, and then afterwards, you know, for each application, it adds an additional fee, okay? This is hard to see, but the number of applications that each person gave for a different field, okay? So I'll give an example. So if you were applying to neurology, the average number of places that people applied were 22, whereas if you're doing something more competitive, if you're doing otolaryngology with the ENT, they're applying to 62 schools. Okay, so this gets you an idea of how many schools that you want to apply to for when you're applying to a different field. Okay, go ahead. And go ahead again. That's okay. We can skip that one. So the next several slides, I'm going to take you. This is stuff from again the NMRP, which is a matching program that's part of the MCAS, part of ERAS. So this is data from there. It's hard to show this, but it shows kind of the match rates per field, so how many people match in a different field. So if we take, you know, radiology, 99% of the U.S., you know, applicants matched, where if we take, you know, neurosurgery, only 79%. So this kind of gives you the variability in terms of how competitive different fields are. So the mean score of all applicants, okay, so for step one is about 230. Again, if you get below that, that doesn't mean you're not going to get in. You know, I'm giving you this just kind of ballpark, you know, about what the different scores are for the step one, step two, you know, how many publications, abstracts, and so on are there. Mm-hmm. These are for the various fields that kind of show kind of standard deviations for the average step one score. So we take anesthesiology, the median score is 230 with the standard deviation like 220 to 240. Okay, so that's it for various different fields. This kind of shows, you know, with the various fields, how many research experiences that people have. The left column is, you know, for U.S. graduates, the right column is for foreign graduates. For sake of time, I'm just kind of going a little bit fast. This again shows the same thing in terms of abstracts, so go forward one more. So I just gave as an example, so this is emergency medicine. So emergency medicine, the left column is if you match, the right column is if you didn't match. So for people who had a 190, you know, between 211 and 220, you know, there's 113 that matched and 20 that didn't. So you can kind of see which is what expected, that, you know, the higher your score is, the more likelihood that you're going to match. And you also can see that, you know, based on the bell curve, you know, between 220 and 240 is where the majority of people kind of fall into play. This shows the average number of research. So most people have one to two, you know, research projects. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they had a publication going forward, but they had some sort of research project, right? So this is the things that are put out there from the NMRP, right? So you have to do research to help improve. Again, for MD programs. The DO, I didn't pull data for that. And then just kind of go forward just a couple more. Again. So, we'll do a recap at the end, but why don't we take like a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and then we'll do a panel session. We'll get all the panel members up here. I had some kind of first, the way we'll do it is I had kind of some first questions that I kind of posed to them, and then we'll leave it open to see if people have questions going forward. Huh? You don't have time? Okay. Unless you guys are ready to go? Okay. So Essen, come up. Sorry. I was a chatty Cathy, so I went and we started a little bit late. So, can you go forward? So on the panel, walking up, we have Essen. So Essen is from Atlanta here. So he's originally from Pakistan, but he's been living in Atlanta. So he is currently a fourth year medical student at Morehouse. And then to my right, I have Qasim Jaffrey. So Qasim Jaffrey is in his second year of residency. So he went to DO school at AT Steel University. And then now he is doing his radiology residency. And then we have Mohammad Raza, who is also my cousin, and he has been all over the country for his training, but he's now settled at Henry Ford Hospital, and he's a program director for the GI Fellowship there. And so I'm just gonna kind of try and first prompt them with some questions that I thought, you know, people might have for them, and then we'll see if there's time for a question answer. So go ahead. So for Essen, you know, one of the things that I think looking back, is what do you wish that people told you when you were a first and second year student in school? Sorry, why don't you scoot over?
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Like he said, he mentioned actually a lot of stuff, basically what we need to know about medical school and medical students. And like first and foremost, I just want to say, like,
how much time do we have?
Prepare you.
Is it done? It's 4:15. Then we have a lot more time.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Then we have a lot more time. I'm sorry. I went long.
But
I didn't mean to go that long.
Nothing can prepare you. Only medical school can prepare you for medical school. One other thing that I would recommend is that basically enjoy your time. You know, this is like the time when you got your acceptance letter to when you're going to be starting in medical school, and these 4 years are going to be one of the hardest years of your life. They're going to be hard in terms of financially. Okay.
I think this will work.
Hello?
It'll be hard personally, academically, family-wise, so it will just be difficult. So I think I would just recommend just basically be well-balanced in family, be well-balanced in like working out, exercise, eating healthy, things like that. You tend to realize when you become a first year that there are things that will work for you when you study, and there are things that won't work for you. Sometimes, like initially, like when I was a first year medical student, like a bunch of us would like study in a study room, and we were being really unproductive. We were spending a lot of time, and we would only get like maybe 1 hour worth of studying technically. And I think that's, you learn that pretty quick because you can't spend that much time on one subject. So you need to be very quick and you need to be efficient, and you also need to realize what works with you. And it will change. As you go on to becoming a second year, things will change. What worked with you first year might not work with you second year. So you need to see what works with you. And only experience can tell you with that. Second year is one of the hardest year, I would say. Second year is when you're learning pathology and you're learning like microbiology and all of these things, like really hard pathophysiology, all these really hard, like you said, all these hard subjects, but they're really interesting. These are the reasons why like you went into medicine, because first year is all about like normal. Usually medical school, usually we learn the basic normal human body and then you learn the abnormal. So second year is visually most of the schools just focus more on the abnormal stuff, and the abnormal is what intrigues us. That's why we're becoming medical, that's why we're becoming doctors. So second year is gonna be hardest year. Just basically be flexible, you know, have a study buddy. I would recommend maybe like one or two more at most. Don't have more than three people studying at once. Do a lot of questions, like a lot. And you're gonna be doing questions for MCAT, that's how you learn. You're gonna do questions for your step one, that's how you learn in this. Basically, you need to do a lot of questions. Second year, I would recommend, there's a book, I think I told you, there's a book called First Aid, and he also talked about by Tao Li, and it is for step one. And I would recommend second year just annotating that. Like, as you go on, you have those lectures, you can just annotate what you learned from those lectures from your school, and then you can just go from there and then review at the end of the year when you're about to take your step one. Okay. I think those are some of the things that I want to mention. If you guys have any other questions, let me know. I'm here. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go one more. Go one more. Can you talk? Yeah, answer that a little bit. Okay. So read the question.
So the question is, what advice can you give about clinical rotations and succeeding on the wards? If it's okay, I know we are limited on time. I want to give just a quick thing that I thought about. First of all, I want to say that I think Muhammad Akbar did a really good job, because if I was to give a talk on how to be a doctor in less than an hour, I don't think I could have covered each one of those things. He did a great job of kind of giving the overview of each and every step, and going through that, even I cringed at some of the thoughts of like what I've gone through over the last few years, you know? So he did a really good job summarizing that. Number one is, before we get to the clinical rotations and the specific questions, I think something that we forget a lot of times is that they always use the example that this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. Just by going through those slides, you can see this is not like a, okay, I'm gonna be a doctor, I'm gonna do this and write down every single thing on a piece of paper, because that's, you're gonna forget that, you're gonna lose that paper, you're not gonna have those ideas in your mind. You gotta kind of find what drives you. You know, some people, they are enthralled by the pathology, they're enthralled by, I want to help people, but what really drives you, because that's something that you're going to have to fall back on every time that you run into any kind of barrier or anything that kind of stops you and says, this is too hard for me, or in this country, there's this idea that if things become difficult or if things are too hard in our own minds, there's a lot of times in this country where people say, maybe you should try something else. Maybe this isn't working for you. Rather than actually working through whatever challenges you're facing and working through whatever problems are going around, instead of taking that tendency that maybe I should try something a little easier, something for me, if this is something that you want to do, if this is something that you're saying, hey, this is a good way, a halal means of earning money for my family in the future, and this is what I want to do, if this is a challenge for you, figure out what it's going to take to get to the next level. Because if you have that mentality, that'll only help you with whatever challenges that you face. And like Muhammad Akbar was saying, always remember that you want to make sure that you're keeping up with your deen at the same time. This is a way that you can help people in the future. Allah has given us the opportunity to, you know, I work in a community hospital that's surrounded with a lot of other Muslims. Whenever I see I'm helping this patient, but now I have an opportunity to help Muslims with my knowledge that Allah has allowed me to attain. So if you can kind of keep those things in the background of your mind at all times, I think that would help you moving forward and give you a better idea of when things get hard, is there something that I can fall back on? Is there a reason why I'm doing this? Because if you keep getting stuck up on the one challenge that you have ahead of you, and as he showed you, there's going to be a lot of challenges in your way, it's going to be difficult to move forward, and the task may almost seem overwhelming, which it's not. If you take it one step at a time, if you trust Allah, He's going to guide you and help you through the way. Opportunities will present themselves, and you'll be able to take advantage of those. What advice can you give about clinical rotations and succeeding on the wards? I think he spoke to some of those things. Number one is don't lie. There should be no reason for us to lie to begin with, but there's nothing that's going to harm anyone but yourself, and worse, the patient, if you lie about something that happens on the wards. That's the number one. A doctor once told me, you're not expected to be able to know what things are like right now. You're not expected to know every single diagnosis because you haven't graduated. You're not given the responsibility of the buck stops with you here. On the wards, this is the time for you to learn. The best way to do it is to see as many patients as you can and learn what's wrong with the patient, why it's wrong. Go back to the pathology that you learned in second year and even the basic sciences and apply those. But succeeding on the wards is a time for you to just respect the doctor, know when to ask questions, when it's appropriate, and at the end of your rotation, ask them, what could I do to improve this? So that for the next rotation, you know what works. Every doctor is different. You'll learn that surgeons are different than internal medicine doctors. There's all kinds of different fields here that people do things in different ways. You just gotta find out what they like and what they expect of you. Don't get into a situation where at the end of the rotation, they had an expectation of you that you didn't even know about. At the beginning of the rotation, figure out what your expectations are, and inshallah, you can go from there.
So,
I'll answer this question a little easier. What do you know about the ACGME, MD, and DO merger, and how it affects DO medical students and residents? I am a DO. I went to a DO hospital. I can tell you, I don't know a whole lot about this other than what rumors are kind of circulating. What I do know is that they have merged. The graduate medical educations of MD and DO have merged, meaning I think by 2020, you're gonna be applying in the same residency match when you apply for your residency programs. In all hospitals now, I think you'll find that there are MDs and DOs. What this means exactly is that basically, you're gonna be applying and there's gonna be more competition for fewer amounts of spots. And I think if you have that in mind, you're gonna be studying for your second year boards. Just be prepared for the idea that the pool is not getting any bigger, but the spots may be getting less for the same amount of, so if that makes sense, there's gonna be more people graduating medical school than there are gonna be residency positions. So if you keep that in mind and the fact that you're already gonna be studying the same material in your second year, you may as well take both board exams. Eventually, one of those board exams you may not have to take in the future, but you may as well take both board exams and be prepared for the opportunity that you're gonna apply broadly with the idea that inshallah you'll be somewhere.
I keep putting in you. Actually, let's look over for time purposes.
We'll move on to the next question. What tips could you give someone in your situation who needed to apply again? Sorry? I don't mind at all.
Okay. So can you explain?
What tips
could you give? You're saying, because you went and then you applied again. That's why I asked you that question. Like you did anesthesia and then, unless you don't.
Oh, definitely, no problem. Okay, so this is something that, this goes back to the point that what drove you. What drove me is that I wanted to be doing medicine, but I wanted to be in Michigan. Michigan was important to me because that's where my family was, my support system, my friends. That's where I wanted to be. I don't want to be, a lot of people will tell you, it's only a couple of years, don't worry, you can be in Alaska and be away from your wife and everything like that. That's, for some people, there's things a little more important in life, and one of those things was being close to my family for where I trained. So I wanted to apply even to, so long story short, the reason why I even went and explained that was because I had a lot of offers in internal medicine to apply because in the DO field, a lot of these program directors will tell you, we're gonna rank you, you're probably gonna be accepted to our program. And I went and I said, you know, I don't wanna do that. I would rather do something like anesthesia, which seemed a little more interesting to me. And because I wanted to stay in Michigan, I limited my programs, so I only applied to two programs. And you'll learn that that's probably not the best idea if you want to give yourself a good chance of matching somewhere. And alhamdulillah, it didn't match. And I say alhamdulillah because now you look for other ways out. There's other programs out there. There's transitional years out there. There's, you know, a general intern year that you could do in medicine or pre-surgical year. Once you graduate, all you have to do is 1 year. It's got to either be an internal medicine year, a surgical year, or a transitional year. Everyone does that across the board. So if you can find opportunities for applying to one of those three fields, then that's the way you go. You should never feel it. At any point, there could be something to happen to you that you wanted to go a certain direction, but something else came in your life or something else happened. It's always a good idea, as a general rule, to have an understanding of, is there a backup? God forbid, if something goes the way I planned or doesn't go the way I planned, is there a way for me to have another route, for me to still get to the direction where I want to go? Because like I said, don't get to that point where you hit a wall and you don't know how to get around it or over it. Always kind of at least have some kind of fallback, and that's, I guess that's a general advice. Needing to apply again, there's going to be opportunities. You're not the first person that needs to apply again. There's a reason why there are there's people that can help you with that as well.
Okay, Marza. So, okay, go fast. Go one more.
So the question reads, how did you pick the field that you applied to?
So I'm in the process of applying, and I actually didn't know I wanted to do internal medicine, psychiatry, or even surgery before even going to medical school. And as soon as I did my third year rotation, my first rotation was pediatrics, and I just fell in love. I fell in love with the kids, I fell in love with the hospital, I just fell in love with like the ambience. From that to the knowledge to the ID, I just fell in love, and I just realized like that was the rotation, that was the career path that I'm going to take. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not like that. Many of my friends are actually still deciding in their fourth year, so they're still deciding what fields they're going to go into. And I think like there's something that you just realize, like he also mentioned, different people have different personality, and different doctors have different personality. There's a surgeon personality, and there's a medicine personality. And within the surgeon personality, there's people who are like vascular surgeons, they have different personality, whereas people who are medicine, they're pediatricians, they have different personality. And so you just need to know where you fit into that. I think knowing yourself and knowing what you want to do and how you want to balance life is a huge way to realize what you want to do. And I think with me, like I knew that I wanted to do have a good balance. I wanted to have a fairly good. I didn't want my work to identify me, and I wanted to have I wanted to be a good Muslim. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good brother. I wanted to be basically the best person that I can be. So that's how I picked pediatrics as my career. And I think as you go on, I think third year is the year where you're going to decide where you're going to do these rotations. You're going to do rotations like psychiatry and internal medicine and surgery, and then you just realize that you can do this the rest of your life. Like for me, as a sub-I, I was working maybe like 12 to 13 hours a day, but at the end of my drive going back home, even though I was sleepless and restless and tired, I was just smiling because I was like, I can do this the rest of my life because I just love it. I'm making a difference. I relate to my patients. I just love what I do, and I'm happy. I think you just in your heart, they just tell you, you know, just your body and your brain tells you.
Marcia. So first, I'll say that all of this is, it's important to emphasize that all this is worth it, that you're going to have the craziest job you can imagine. You're going to meet insane people and do insane things, and there's nothing more enjoyable than doing medicine or surgery or whatever you're doing. But the truth is that it really is worthwhile for that more than anything else. Just the kind of life experience that you get from doing medicine is not like anything else. The other thing I'll emphasize is that a lot of people switch things around. A lot of people treat all the other things on your applications as very serious, and they treat their studies as a game. And what I mean by that is when people are trying to study, they don't take it seriously, they don't time things, they don't think, well, I'm gonna study from 8 to 6 every single day and give myself a schedule in college and be rigorous about that. They hang out with their friends, they have a good time, they kind of forget about the studying aspect. and then they treat the other side of things and they forget that that part's a game. So the research part, the volunteer part, the things that you're trying to do in terms of your building your application, all those things are a game. That's a business that you're trying to build. That's an application you're trying to build. You don't have to take that as being 100% serious. You need to try to use the resources you have available. So if I need to do research, what I need to do is email every program director I can, one after the other, and tell them I want to do one research project. I want it to be a poster. I want it to be very, you know, significant, but do it in this period of time. Play the game. That's the game. There is a game involved. When you're volunteering or doing volunteering experience, don't take that seriously. So if you go to a hospital volunteer, go take some time and study while you're there. There's no need for you to treat that as anything more than a check on the boxes that you have on your application. Give things the weight that they should have. Realize that your studies matter a lot, and all the other stuff needs to be a check on the list, but doesn't need to be something that you think is sort of, you know, complicated. Don't make it more complicated than it is. So if you need to have leadership in multiple clubs, join organizations, join subcommittees, get involved, and if you still find that you're not getting leadership positions, create your own clubs. There's nobody that says you can't create your own organization and make yourself the president of that organization. People did that all the time in college, and it works. You put that on your application. All you need is two leadership positions. You need those boxes checked. Check those boxes. Play the game. So sort of get an idea of what the game is and what you need to do, and then play the game. As far as interviews, it's a similar situation as with everything else. So, you know, even in school or anything else, when you need letters, you have to meet people, you have to schmooze with people, you have to figure out how best to build bridges with people. When you're in the interview process, you want to make sure that you have things that can build bridges. So the first med school that I got into because I talked about The Exorcist in the middle of my interview, right? So that's what somebody was interviewing me, and I was not doing well in my interviews at all. And then I kind of finally got to one that I didn't care about so much. And it was a very relaxed interview. We talked about movies, and that's what came up. And somehow it got thrown out there. So your letter recommendations are going to matter a lot, and there's not much you can control there besides making sure you give it to the right people. But once you get an interview, make sure first that you're emphasizing only the positives. Nobody is going to worry about the negatives at that point. You've gotten to the stage where you have an interview, so don't apologize if you got a bad grade or if you came late. I went to an interview where the first three interviews of that day, I apologized because I had come 20 minutes late. Nobody knew I came 20 minutes late at that point. So don't ever emphasize the negatives, just emphasize the positives throughout the interview process. And keep throwing out bridges. So if you love basketball, if you're, you know, doing karate, anything like that, kind of throw that into the conversation. Everybody's looking for something that they want to talk about that's not the same as everybody else's. So they'll really be enthusiastic about that. Know things on your application inside out. So if you have a research project, if you have some sort of experience with an organization, make sure you know about that, and it's not just sort of on the CV for fun, because they may pick up and just ask you about it. And you want to at least have an answer, even if it's not sort of a nice, pretty answer.
So for time purposes, we'll kind of open it up if anybody has questions. You can throw it out there. If they're not comfortable, you can just write it out, and then somebody will go around and help pick it up if you don't feel comfortable standing up. If you have questions, anybody? Of which part? Cost.
I think the average coming out of medical school, I think the average is about $200,000.
Of debt.
That has to be paid back starting the time you start your residency. There are different ways of managing that. So let's say you are coming out, you had no help whatsoever, you've got that full $200,000 that you need to pay back. There is a system that lawyers have came up with called income-based repayment, where they look at your taxes from the year prior and how much you made. If you were in medical school and you weren't working, as a fourth-year medical student, you made $0. So you can actually bypass that for a whole year. And income-based repayment means they're going to start looking at, okay, as a resident, you made like $40,000 to $50,000. Based off that, you're going to have a certain amount that you have to pay per year, which is going to be significantly less. And if you were to pay back that same amount in a monthly increment for X amount of years. You gotta talk to people about it though, because the interest definitely accumulates if you take longer to pay it back, or if you pay shorter or smaller amounts initially. One other quick thing is that you use your college's resources really well.
There's a lot of financial aid options, programs, grants, whatever, that are out there, but you have to look for them. And just apply for as many as you can. And whatever you get, that's great, but it is expensive.
You have a question? Okay.
The last thing I would say to that is this, the JFIL, I believe, I forget what the acronym is, there's an opportunity here where you can have this organization that I believe is based out of Houston, where you can have an interest-free loan repayment. I mean, if I had known about this from before and now I know about it, I can apply for it. These are overwhelming loans that most other people don't have, and most other people don't have, you know, the time frame that we do to pay on. Other people are paying off mortgages and other things. We're paying off a medical student or a lawyer, law student loan. These are good opportunities that instead of paying back $200,000 plus interest, you can have an opportunity to pay back, you know, inshallah, it's not that high for most people, but you can have that paid back without the interest added. So there's opportunities that we have in our own community now, alhamdulillah, and I think we should learn about these and take advantage of them as well. So hopefully that's manageable for people.
It's also important just to cost manage. I think a lot of people, I have friends that bought houses with their loans. So I mean, some of that money is just people doing stupid things with money, and it's just very important. Obviously, if you can stay somewhere where it's cheap and you can keep your costs low, people are young when they're in medical school and they don't really understand.
Any other questions? The QBank nowadays, it's called USMLE World, or UWorld is what they call it. That's a standard question bank. It's got like, I don't know, 2,000 questions, and there's one for the DO as well. They have different ones for the DOs. But nowadays, if you're taking the USMLE, these are, and this is awesome now. You only need two books to study for one exam. And they go and they ask the students every single year what questions showed up on the exam. And just by probability, you're going to get a question on this subject or that subject. And if you know the subjects that are commonly tested, the chances are you're going to perform well on the exam. So if you know this first aid book and UWorld, which correlate well with each other, you'll do well. But it's called USMLE World.
But study that like it's a book. You have to think of it not as, a lot of times when we do practice questions or questions, we're just taking the questions and just doing the questions for the sake of the questions. That is a thing to, one, get yourself familiar with the exam, but two, it's a resource for knowledge. And what it helps with that is that you could study a huge textbook of pathology. Great, you don't need to know a huge textbook of pathology worth of information. What you need to know is the information of the questions that are commonly asked and the answers to those. And so that's what I took me a long time to grasp. I would read and read and read and read and read, and I would do great on the floor, on my wards and my evaluations, I'd do really well, but when it came to the exams, I would not do as well for the amount of effort I put. And that's because I didn't learn and study the questions. And that's what the USMLE world is doing. So if you learn the questions, then you'll know, okay, for biochem, this is what I need to know. These are the answers that I need to know it for, you know?
I just want to add one more thing. When you're studying for these type of exams, the way you study changes. So initially, how you take an exam, you know, you read the question from the top, and then you look, you know, you're basically, but the step one and step two, these questions are long. These are really long questions. So something that really helped me was that now I've been trying to like look at the last question, like the last stem, and see what the question is asking. And usually they're like, what's the diagnosis? Or what's the next best at management? Or, you know, what is this? So they usually, and then you briefly look at the answer choices, and then you go and read the question again. So that really helps you a lot, because if now you're, when you're reading the question, the second, well, you know, when you're reading the question now, you're like kind of have an idea of what the question is going to ask and what you're looking for. You're looking for a diagnosis. You're looking for some illness. The other thing I would recommend is there's a, aside from Euro, there's a test called NBMEs, which are basically old exams that they have given out in the past years that have been retired. So you can keep on practicing with those, and that will give you a projected score. And then if you're feeling comfortable and you're scoring within the limits, within your goals, then you go ahead and you take your exam, your step one or step two.
Just one thing that comes to mind, and I don't know, I'm sure this is across the board with any field, but we've got network out there. Use your resources in your communities. Use the resources of people that you have that are, if you know a program director, if you know anybody that's remotely in the direction of where you're heading, ask them for advice. And when the time comes, if they can actually help you, you know, I want to get a job at a certain hospital, and I know a physician that works at that hospital that may know that person, why not utilize your resources? If we're trying to build an Islamic community and utilize each other and build brotherhood, why not use the brothers and sisters that we have in our community that may be able to help you? I'd be lying if I told you I didn't get help from other people to make a connection with somebody else that has influence getting to this place that I wanted to go. So I think that's, if we can emphasize that point, in this field that's very important. And if you can find those people and search them out, that's one of the reasons why we're up here. If you have questions, even if we can't help, we may know people that can help. And that did help us, maybe even.
And wherever possible, meet them in person. Meet them in person if you can.
But, like, there's nothing wrong. And it's actually good, like, if you're in college, go shadow, you know, Abbas uncle, Salaf uncle, and he'll write you a letter. You know, but be honest about it. So actually put in the work, shadow him, work with him, and then say, hey, Abbas uncle, do you mind writing me a letter? Of course, yes, I'll write you a letter. Write it for me, and then I'll sign it. You know, there's no problem with that. Right, you're being honest, you're playing by the rules, and you're doing the work, you're getting exposure to the field, and that's who you know in your community, and use it. And so that's what we mean by networking, getting to know people, you know, trying to figure out in your school who are important people to get to meet, you know, so that's where the pre-medical clubs or whatever clubs you get to meet, the admissions committee person, etc. So
I think, is there anything else? Any other take-home things?
So I think we'll wrap up. Inshallah, this was helpful, and you know, inshallah, we wish you the best. I put my email address on the slide that got passed out, so if anybody has any questions in the future, you can always email and ask for help, or we can try and direct you to kind of go forward. And just wanted to thank, you know, everyone up here for adding their input and their insight. I think it really gave great advice to everybody, and if we can just finish with the last salat, and we'll wrap up.